Welcome to a Bowden Education podcast. In this podcast, I'm talking to Catherine Carden about what is key to effective leadership. Catherine has held a number of leadership roles, including head of department and head of sixth form in secondary education. And in university, she has held the position of director of primary initial teacher education and has been and still is chair of governors in a primary school. Catherine speaks and writes on leadership, and I have seen that some of the key areas that she's examined are looking at systems and processes in leadership, but also looking at a more personal approach. So that's what I'm going to start by asking Catherine about. Catherine, could you welcome, by the way, and
thank you.
And could you talk to us about systems and processes in leadership?
Yeah. I have, and through the work that I've sort of undertaken, I talk a lot about the difference between leadership and management. And to my mind, I think we need to distinguish very, very carefully between the two. And as leaders, we need to be fully aware of when we are leading and when we are managing. Ideally, we should all aspire to be leaders rather than managers. However, within that, I fully acknowledge that in undertaking a leadership role effectively, there are management tasks as such to do. So when we talk about perhaps leadership processes and procedures and systems and things like that, I would generally couch these under the area of management. So, of course, every leader needs to undertake these, but to my mind, it is not necessarily systems and processes that would transform your school or your organisation, your department or whatever you're leading. So having effective systems, effective processes is absolutely key and fundamental to the smooth operation of your school, department, so on. And indeed, many are required legally and for the protection of children, etc. However, to my mind, this isn't the area of leadership that would make that significant difference between being an okay, satisfactory leader to being a leader that's truly innovative, inspirational, and transformational.
Yes, definitely. And those are key words, I think, aren't they, in terms of getting that leadership that can see us through times of challenge as well as when perhaps times are easier. And we'll come on to looking at times of challenge in a bit.
Yeah.
But I think probably what helps in any of those situations is what you've described as a more personal approach to leadership and to the people involved, the relationships. So could you talk us through that a bit more?
Yeah. Really, when you take on a role as a leader, you are taking on a role of looking after, supporting, developing, and enhancing the work of all the people that work for and with you. But all so often what happens is you're promoted to the role of a leader. And I have, as you said in your introduction, had a variety of leadership roles. And what I find fascinating now, looking back, having a research interest in leadership, I look back on my own promotions and I see it in pretty much any promotion into a leadership role, that actually people take on this new job, given the title, etc., and all the responsibilities that go with it. But at no point really does anyone stop and think, well, now I need to learn to be a leader. And that's what we really should be doing, because it doesn't necessarily come naturally. To my mind, it's leadership, if we look at it like a creative art, rather than a discipline or a job, I think you then begin to have a slightly different perspective around it. So seeing it as such and thinking about who you are as a leader and what you want to achieve, but then the how are you going to achieve it is really important. And I would say that we don't do that enough as leaders across the education sector. And a key part of that for me is to put people at the centre of what you do. If you look after your people, then other things fall into place because you've got a steady workforce who are motivated, who want to do their best, who feel valued and therefore give so much more. And as well as that comes under the huge discussions all the time about well-being. And I think that's an important part of people-centered leadership, that you look after the people that who work for you and within your team. And if you can chuck all of those ingredients into the pot, then I think you have got what it takes then to move forward as an exceptional leader, but also to have people who want to work for you, who want to stay working for you, and who themselves have the potential then and the support to develop as great leaders. All too often, though, I really do think that, going back to the first question you asked, Virginia, was I really think that leaders become fixated with the processes and systems, the things like the data checks and writing reports and maybe sort of monitoring quality and things like this, that consumes their day, that before long what they end up doing is becoming quite invisible and office bound and remote from the people that they should be leading. And that worries me an awful lot. So going back to what I said initially on the outset of this, is that you really do need to learn to be a leader. We're promoted because we show the capacity to have the skills to undertake a leadership role, but I think then there is so much more learning to do. And I read and think and write and talk so much about leadership, but I still am going through that learning process. And I think it's fascinating to do that, and we should, as leaders, really be invested in developing our own leadership, not just assuming the title.
Yes, absolutely. And I've been on the receiving end of your leadership in terms of being on a team that you led. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking of some examples that we could perhaps give in terms of how effective that was, because I did find it very effective. And just to give a couple of examples from my experience, is that, for example, we would come to a meeting and things would actually get done in the meeting once a discussion had taken place and everyone contributed, and then actual actions would take place. Whereas a lot of meetings in the past I've gone to, where you would come out of the meeting feeling quite deflated because nothing had actually got done in the meeting, and therefore it meant that after the meeting you have an enormous amount to do, which on top of what you'd normally do. But I think as a leader you successfully managed to build the actions into the meeting, which I think is a really powerful strategy. And I just wondered if there were, I mean, I could go on and on about the different strategies which you implemented, but is there anything that sticks in your mind that you think, I really do make a very conscious effort to do that?
There are some things that I make a conscious effort to do and are not necessarily easy things to do, particularly in the early days of leadership or when you take on leadership of a new and unknown team. And I think for me, that is a key element of that is transparency. I think you need to be hugely transparent as a leader, and that is not always easy from the outset. It becomes easier, but to move from potentially an opaque environment to a transparent environment is kind of like opening loads of cans of worms. You're going to have to deal with all of that before you get to the good part. But I do believe that transparency is key, because you can't have trust without transparency, really. And you need to have trust within a team. And by that, I don't necessarily mean to say it is simply a matter of trusting your leader and the leader trusting their team. I think there needs to be trust in the fact that when you do speak, say you gave the example of meetings, if people make a contribution to meetings, there needs to be trust in a trusting environment so people's contributions can be applauded but also challenged. And that goes always, and that I've been in so many meetings perhaps and situations where the leader goes unchallenged, and that worries me greatly, because the team that you put around yourself, so the people that work immediately for you as a leader, should be the ones that are challenging you. And you should, in my mind, gather a diverse team as well that who will challenge you and have different perspectives. Otherwise, all you're going to do is reinvent the wheel and maintain a status quo, and you're not going to get the best possible answer. So I think transparency and trust are really key, but also humility. Just because you've been given the title of leader of or director of whatever your title might be, it doesn't make you better than anyone. It doesn't make you the person that has all the answers. And I think holding your own hand up when you're struggling or when you've made a mistake or when you need support publicly is really, really important. And following through anything you say with action. And I hate the phrase, but it's people say, don't they, it's not just about talking the talk, it's about walking the walk. And I hate that so much. I don't know why it grates on me, that phrase. But it is very much about being that role model. So you do what you say consistently. And that, in turn, builds trust. So there's quite a cycle there. But I think those that, to me, humility, and that includes care, trust and transparency.
Yes, that's great. And it's interesting that you said about obviously feeding off your team and taking advice and listening to everybody's views. And for me, when I picture in my mind the difference between leadership and management, I see management, and it may not always be the case, but this is the image I have, is management is quite hierarchical, and you know, all the tasks kind of drip down to the team, and the manager at the top literally manages that, whereas the leader is far more what you've described there, which is someone who's in amongst the team, sharing the ideas, taking on board everyone's viewpoints, and also giving them, you know, putting the ball in the team's court. Because I can remember, what was it you used to say, that it came from something you'd read about giving a percentage of the vote, as it were, to the team?
This is some stuff that I read in Liz Wiseman's Multipliers, I believe. And essentially, it's about autonomy. And so often, and you're kind of right, if you've got a manager or a micromanager, even worse, that won't let go of control, you as a leader, you're one person. You might actually be responsible for a large chunk of work, you know. So when I was director of primary initial teacher education, we had 50 plus members of staff and I don't know 1600 students within our area. And leaders need to acknowledge that they're not the person that's going to do it all, and nor should they be, and nor can they be. So when you're bringing on new leaders and you have a leadership team, I adopted this notion of 51% of the vote. So if I was to have a conversation with you, Virginia, as one of my direct reports, and you came to me and you said, oh, this course of action I wish to take course of action A, for example. And I'm kind of thinking, well, I think B would be better. So what I would not do is say, well, I think B is better, we're going to go with that. What we would do is have a robust conversation about the advantages and disadvantages of the different routes and different decisions. And then you would have the final say. I would only intervene and override you if it was going to be an absolute 100% catastrophic disaster that would be hugely detrimental to safety, finances, legalities, anything like that. But essentially, to bring on new leaders, you need to feel that you have autonomy and can say, well, actually, thank you for a really good discussion, Catherine, but I'm going to go with course of action A. If it's successful, great. If not, then we have a conversation about why it may not be, okay? Which sounds really, really risky. And I'm not talking necessarily here that, you know, these aren't one-offs. This is a constant 51% of the vote around all decisions and all discussions. Because good leaders bring on new leaders to be better leaders than they, okay, in my mind. So that is my job. The only way you're going to do that is to allow people to learn how to lead, to learn how to make decisions, to learn how to think through decisions and the outcomes of those. If you were to come to me always and say, well, I want to go A and I was going to say B, you're going to go B, I disagree with you, go B. Eventually, what you'd do is you wouldn't even bother to think about which course of action you're going to take because I'm going to tell you anyway. So what I'm doing is taking away your thinking, your interest, perhaps, and certainly your autonomy. And in your role as a leader during that time, you'll be learning very little. So that's my 51% of the vote theory. And I've developed really exceptional leaders. And that's because nothing magical, don't have a magic wand, I'm not brilliant. I just scaffolded their development and allowed them to become better than me.
No, that's great. Thank you for that. So just moving on to a slightly different theme, there are lots of publications that come from the private sector, particularly from the States, which is not focused specifically on education, but has very useful perspectives and ideas about leadership. And I just wondered if you felt there's anything that we could learn and transfer from this into educational contexts.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we've got a dearth of education specific. And then if we look at sort of UK or even English educational leadership texts, I think we need much more that is more directly applicable to what we do. But there are some great things that we can learn from the private sector and indeed from a lot of the stuff that comes out of the States. And then some of that is text, but some of that is from people that speak a lot around leadership. So Amazon's CEO, Jeff Bezos, Arianna Huffington, formerly of the Huffington Post, talk a lot about leadership in a variety of contexts, and I think we can learn so much. I perceive that all too often perhaps school leaders take these it's more innovative leadership approaches that are more kind of modern contemporary approaches to leadership and think we can't do them because we work in schools. I'll give you an example. Jeff Bezos, for example, talks about, you know, the flexibility of work and he wakes up when he wakes up and then goes in when he goes into work and it's much better like that, etc. Arianna Huffington talks a lot about how we shouldn't be modelled on factory lines of how many hours a week you work. It should be about the quality of your work and not the amount of hours you do. We don't employ you because you can do X number of hours. We employ you because you have skills, knowledge, etc. Immediately, it's really easy to say, well, you can't do that in school, can you? Because we do need to have you there for certain hours. You can't just roll in at 10 o'clock and say, sorry, class, I had a nice lie-in. And so all too often, some of these creative leadership ideas are kicked into the long grass straight off. It doesn't work. We work in a school. It wouldn't work for us. Now, of course, I'm not saying that either of those two approaches would necessarily work as I've presented them to you there. However, I think we need to take time to look at some of these creative approaches and think about how we could adapt them to work in schools. And I think in schools, we're very traditional around leadership. It verges on management a lot of the time. We think we can't do a lot of things because of the environment that is a school. And actually, I think we have a lot more flexibility than we like to think we do. And it's about pressing the pause button, looking at some of these newer and creative and more flexible ways of leadership and thinking, how can they be adapted to work in our environment? And there's some simple wins, you know, PPA, could that be done at home? Have the choice of that. How could we utilise teacher development? Do we have to drag everyone into a hall at 4 o'clock till 6 o'clock on a dark November evening, trying to offer something that will meet everyone's needs? Or could we have an individualised plan for every single member of staff that's completely flexible? So maybe some people are working on further qualifications and accessing that in the evenings. Are people following a series of webinars, etc., etc.? And then utilising those inset days as additional sort of flexi working days and so on. So there are loads of things we can think about that admittedly it does take time to sit down and think about how we can adapt these, but I think there's some great ideas that are coming out of the private sector that we can learn from in schools. And bearing in mind teacher attrition rates from a profession, I think we really, really do need to sit and look at how we can adopt leadership styles and flexible working and approaches if we are going to retain teachers.
Absolutely, and that leads on beautifully to my next point, really, and question, which is leadership is challenging in mm-hmm. the very best of times. And of course, currently we're in times of great challenge. And I wondered if you could talk us through about really extending on how we can look after people, how can you still continue with effective leadership in times of these real challenge?
Yeah, I mean, never has there been a more challenging time for the teaching profession, and I take my hats off to every single head teacher and leadership team, and indeed teacher, who have worked their socks off on changing information since March of this year, and still unknowns even now as we sit here heading in towards Christmas, and even knowing about exactly how children are going to go back to school. So it's been an unprecedented year of challenge. Leadership is challenging, even in a normal year. And it can be extraordinarily lonely, actually, as well. But never has it been more important than to put people at the centre of your leadership, because people are struggling and people are responding to the current situation in very personal and different ways. They've all been affected by it differently, be that directly affected by the virus, or knowing people who are, or having concerns about catching the virus, you know, so many different things. And I think at the moment, head teachers have to prioritise their communities, and they need to look after each other. They need to pull on their own support networks, be that their governing body, be that their mentors, if they have a mentor, or other head teachers in their network for support as well, because it will feel lonely. You're making decisions all across weekends and into the evenings with very little or very confusing advice. And I think now it's about putting people first and being brave. And hopefully those around the head teacher, such as a governing body, will listen and be brave alongside them to make the right decisions. We need to look after teachers. We need to look after our own head teachers and senior leaders as well, who have just worked beyond what anyone would expect teachers to do, or what I believe teachers to do, although the expectation seemingly becoming a growing expectation even from our own Department for Education. But look after, check in on, and be brave, and suspend things like, you know, do you need to ask yourself difficult and brave questions, such as, do I need to continue with book scrutinies? Do I need to continue with our observation programme? how am I supporting staff to make sure they're having time out of their bubbles, which can be hugely intense, particularly in primary schools? Am I offering PPA at home? How am I offering support to those who are learning to teach online? How am I offering continued professional development and professional learning throughout this time, not kind of forgetting all of those other needs? And how am I looking after myself is a big question as well, because, you know, you can only, any leader can only function on full throttle for a certain amount of time before they burn out. So it's about, how am I looking after myself? How am I having some downtime as well? So there are so many questions, but I think it is a case right now of throwing the rule book out and being brave. And that's not easy at all, because we worry about, you know, we've seen things like Greenwich wanting to close their schools and then, you know, being threatened with legal action and things like that. So it isn't easy, but right now it is about putting your school community as a leader in at the forefront of what you're doing, your decision making every day, and being brave enough again to go back and say, do you know, we got it wrong, let's try something else. I know where a school where I'm a chair of governors, they realised that their senior leaders were sort of really getting burnt out by responding every day. So they moved into a notion, they were saying, this isn't right. We're sort of, they're all on their knees. So they kind of made sure every leader had a day working at home where they could get the big kind of paper-based work that they needed to do. And they each had a response day where they were run ragged, but it was only one day and they knew which day it was. So it's about trialing things and being happy to sit down with your leadership team and saying, well, look, this isn't working, let's try something else, and not ploughing on with stuff. So it is about being brave at the moment, but also putting well-being and the school community, community's well-being and health at the top of the agenda.
Yes, thanks for that, Catherine. And it might be interesting for anybody listening to visit a blog which we'll be putting up in the next couple of weeks, which Catherine mentioned about checking in on people, and it's all about checking in rather than checking up on people. So any listeners might want to look at that over January. And there's also Five for Fives that you've written on leadership, and regular webinars that you do for Bowden Education on leadership, as well as blogs. So yeah, plenty there to look at. And I guess what's fascinating is everything that you said about building up a team and the trust and everything that you need for a really strong team and a really strong leadership. When you are faced with these really challenging situations, you know you can call on that team because it's a team you've built, and it is effective. So hugely pertinent at the moment. So just for the last couple of minutes, I just wondered if we could think about looking forward and just really to give some ideas for people in terms of, if they feel they might be listening to this thinking, well, actually, I lead whatever it might be, a subject or a department or whatever. And when I really look at it through this lens, I can see that perhaps I'm a little bit more on the process centered management rather than effective leadership. So just some advice, really, in terms of how would you start to move what you do from process centered to more people centered leadership?
Okay. It can be difficult because process centered is safer and easier. Okay. And we become, as leaders, it's very easy, or as leaders, to become managers, because we can produce data and we feel that that gives us some kind of safety. And we're perhaps programmed to be a bit like that because of the inspection regime that we work within, and so on and so forth, league tables, etc., etc. The first thing that I would always say is that if you feel that you kind of reflect and that you are sat in your office, you don't get out much, and you give yourself many reasons not to, but actually you think, oh, now I've reflected, I think I am in a bit of the management sphere. When making decisions, or how to, or, and that can be decisions on how you're spending your time and prioritizing your work, you can ask yourself one question: what direct impact will this have on the children within my school, the teachers who work within my school, or the wider school community? If there is very little impact, I suggest you consider where in the list that comes. But why are we doing this, and what impact does it have on the lives of, and the professional lives of teachers, but the lives and the transformation of our children, and the impact on the wider community, are just three things. Now, I said them twice because they're so important and so often overlooked. We'll turn down meeting with a colleague who maybe is asked to meet with us because they're distressed, upset, stressed, need to talk something through, need some advice, because we're too busy doing a data trawl or a book scrutiny. And if you ask yourself that question that I just posed, you've just made the wrong decision. If you turn down the opportunity to speak to someone who's asked to speak to you because you're doing a book scrutiny or inputting data or so on and so forth. So I think for me, that's the big million-dollar question that you should ask yourself repeatedly about most things. It's about the impact, because that's why we are in the job that we do, is to have an impact on the lives of those children first and foremost, but also then the professional lives of the staff that we lead. And then thirdly, that community. So I've said it three times now. That to me is the absolute key moving forward. Ask yourself that question and be a little bit brave. Leadership is all about being a little bit brave and saying, I'm doing it my way, I'm doing it better, and I'm going to lead. The impact of leadership over management takes longer. You're not going to get these results overnight, that you could perhaps demonstrate a bit quicker for management in some ways. It will take longer because it's about embedding a culture and about developing behaviours. However, once embedded, they will sustain in the long term, whereas management activity or a management style will end up with you having a really spiky kind of success, not going so well, up and a down, high turnover of staff, so you're constantly reshaping and having to go back to the drawing board about what you're doing, whereas strong leadership will embed and sustain and then last and have a long-term impact that you can continue to build upon, rather than going round the same kind of hamster in a wheel approach, which management does tend to lead to. So that's what I would do moving forward. Brave and ask those questions.
Brilliant, Catherine. So thank you so much for giving your input on leadership. And as I said earlier, there's plenty more follow-up for our listeners in terms of Five for Fives, the webinars for the next year, and also our blogs. So thank you all for listening, and we will sign out. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.